people who love them.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm one of your hosts for this episode of The Thing About Cars. And around the table today, we've got Becca. Are you there?
Hello.
And Dawn, are you with us?
I am with you.
Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. And our special guest for the day is Jake. Jake, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Jake, tell us about your production. It's Just Jake Reviews. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I do car reviews to help support disabilities. I have disability myself. So I try to show the world that, hey, even though you have disability, you can still follow your dream. My dream was to be a car reviewer. So.
Cool. My first question for you, but you do more than just disability reviews, correct? And you actually review the entire car and you get into stuff that's sort of generalist and not just disability focused. Isn't that correct?
So I support disability since I have disability. I try to show the world, because I have a disability, I review cars. Not really about disabilities, but there are some cars I do explain. My disability kind of makes it hard for me. For example, a manual transmission, it's a little hard for me due to my disability. So I try to explain why it's a little hard for me, but hey, I'm still doing it.
Good for you. Yeah, from what I had seen, you were just reviewing the car. It wasn't whether the car worked for any given disability or not. It was just, hey, here's this car and here's what I thought about it. That's what I had seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old-fashioned car geekery, which is something I always appreciate, which is...
Definitely.
Yeah.
Jake, we're so glad to have you. I've been working in the field of disability advocacy for 24 years, and it is great to just have your perspective. So I'm excited to learn from you today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. But if you guys got questions, please have at it. Let's just have our normal thing about cars conversation with Jake. And I actually have a couple things we can throw on the table. Should we do a moment of Grand Trivia Auto?
That might be fun.
Okay, let's do that. Jake, this is our weekly trivia segment that we do. I'll ask a trivia question and then we'll answer it at the end of the episode. So the question for this week is, what is the only car to appear simultaneously on the covers of Time magazine and Newsweek magazine? Would that car be a Ford Mustang, a Chrysler K car? I believe that was the 80s. Was that the Chevy Corvette that appeared on two covers at once? Or was it a Pontiac GTO? And the last choice was a Hyundai GLS.
Wait, was that five choices?
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
That's correct. You have a 1 in 20% chance of getting it now.
Threw in an extra one this week.
Yeah.
Trying to make it hard.
So think about that. We'll answer that question at the end of the episode. Again, those choices, you know, we're trying to figure out which car appeared simultaneously on both covers, Time and Newsweek. The choices are Pontiac GTO, Hyundai GLS, Chevy Corvette, Chrysler K car, or a Ford Mustang. So what other questions might we have for Jake, our special guest? Jake, in all your reviews, what has really stood out to you? Are there any favorites on the car market right now that really turn your head?
That's what I was thinking.
The 2019 Hyundai Veloster N. That car really took me by surprise. If you've never driven that car, it really just looks like you're like, okay, Honda's doing something different. But really, just the history behind it, of the development. You ever heard of Albert Biermann?
Yeah.
He designed that car. He's the big BMW guy. He is one of the guys who designed the E. I'm probably going to botch this, probably get it wrong. E46, E36, M3. I probably got that wrong completely. I'm probably getting somebody pay a comment for it. And then you have, and then the other famous cars he made, those cars were enthusiast driven. He doesn't really care about lap time. He's more on the way the car drives. And the Hyundai Veloster N drives like that. And that's why I loved it so much.
I thought that was a really good pick because I've been reading Road and Track the last few months. And in their Performance Car of the Year issue a few months ago, they picked it over everything else. They had some high-end Corvettes and Porsches and things like that to choose from. But they went with the Hyundai. They said, this is a car that gets it on a level that we can all understand.
What's your favorite feature of the car, Jake?
One thing I really like about the car is it's a perfect daily driver. I also review a Type R a week later after that, and I like the car. And yes, it's a great. I'm like, oh my god, Type R, everyone goes on that spot. But to me, the car is not too daily drivable in my perspective. To me, the car is a little too raw. It drives like a race car most of the time. And to me, when you're sitting in traffic, do you want to be in a race car? Probably not.
Yes.
What I like about the Volkswagen, it has different modes depending on what you're in the mood for. Do you want to go super fast and go around really fun and tight in the twisties? Put in N mode, or I think it has N plus. I forget the mode. It's been a year.
Right.
But then if you're just sitting in traffic and you're like, well, I'm running low on gas, let's put it on the eco mode, and it acts like a regular car. That's why one thing I love about the Volkswagen, it can be whatever you need to be. It has enough space in the back, and people are like, oh, I don't know how to drive manual. The car will teach you to drive manual. The car has a thing called automatic rev limiter. What it does is, when you're giving it a little bit of gas, and most people drive never doing manual, they're probably going to stall it because they're giving too much gas or not doing the right balance. The car will balance it for you if you misplace, so it's much easier to get in it, to shift gears and especially take off. And it's just really fun to do that. And now there's like, oh, I don't like the technology. I know what I'm doing. You can turn it off. There's a button. You just click it off. Simple as that.
Interesting. Cool. I actually had one of my very few imports ever. I'd actually had a Nissan that was a 93, and it had different selections. It had a switch, and you could choose which mode you wanted to be on if you wanted to be more sports car like, or if you wanted to be more economical. So I know what you're talking about. Go ahead.
Sorry. The problem I have was other cars that have those modes, they don't program them right. Like, for take the Type R, for example. The car is either a boring a plain Jane Civic or a race car. Like, when you're in high speed, it drives like a race car. When you're in low speed, it drives like a regular Civic. One thing I love about the Volkswagen, no matter what mode you're in, it feels enthusiastic. It has that passion inside the car. You don't have to drive at 100 miles an hour just to feel, to have fun with the car. The car is fun no matter what you're doing.
That's a really great point. That's one of the things that I think is starting to emerge among a lot of enthusiasts today is, you know, in the high-end market, you know, when you get into McLarens and things like that, a lot of these cars are so incredibly superlative by the numbers, but they don't become fun until you get beyond the boundaries of the real world.
Especially with Porsches. My buddy, I'm not sure if you know, Raul, I can't pronounce the last name, it's Indian, Sign or something like that. He worked for Jim Mallet's marketing, and he drives a bunch of cars. He recently drove the new 911 Turbo S, and he said the car is way too fast for modern roads, and you can't really experience, you can only have fun with the car without going 100 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
it doesn't hurt that it's cute as a button.
Oh, yeah.
And the price is right. I mean, wow, starting MSRP starts at $18,800.
Yeah, which means you're probably walking out the door with something closer to
$28,000. Yeah, true, but still, that's good. Yeah.
On a 911S, did I miss something?
No, I was talking. My friend Raul, he works for Jim Ellis Marketing Group. He does test drive for different cars for marketing, took pictures like, hey, look, come buy this. He test drove the new 911S because he drove the – now, the 911, you can either get a regular or a turbo. And then your turbo S is like their names are confusing. But the
turbo – I was looking at the entry-level model, but they're both still cute.
Yeah. Wait, the 911, you can either get the regular – or you get the turbo. And he said the turbo is just way too fast. He said he was going on 285 and the car went 1690 in an instant. And it's like, okay, that's a little too fast.
Right. No, that $18,000 price tag, Becca, that belonged to the Veloster.
Okay.
My buddy, the owner who let me view a car, he said he paid out the door, like, I think it was like $28,000, which is way less than a brand new Corolla.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what'd you rather have? A Boeing, a commuter car, or a fun hot hatchback that can compete with cars that are way above it, way more than money.
Right. Well,
speaking for myself, I'd rather have the Veloster, but I can understand why someone may want the Corolla. You know, there are plenty of non-imaginative people out there that just want an Econo box that does one thing and they don't have to think about it until it's time to get the oil changed.
Yeah.
And so that's why you would buy a Corolla, I think, but no.
I mean, I don't have a Corolla, so I can understand.
Yeah, exactly. definitely. I've had my eye on the Veloster for a while and I hope we could put one in the garage one day. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Especially now, they just announced they're putting a dual clutch in the car. Mm-hmm. So an automatic transmission option, which is going to be helpful as well. So people who don't want, people are like, I can't drive manual. What do you can mean? I just don't like manual. Boom, you got an automatic option.
Yeah, exactly. So let me ask the opposing question here. I'm going to butt in line. I don't know if my colleagues have other questions or not, but has there been a car that you reviewed that you just absolutely did not like?
I've been disappointed. Mm-hmm. When I first got started, one of my car buddies from high school, he and his family, they own a bunch of cars together. And so like, hey, let me review some of our cars. So I got to review 4 cars in 1 weekend. And one of those cars was a 2017 Honda Accord. I'm like, oh, okay, that'll be fun because I've never driven a Honda, and all I'm known is they're really enthusiast cars. I like Toyota, they're like the enthusiast. They have the Prelude, the SI, a whole bunch of stuff. So I'm thinking, okay, so this Honda Accord is gonna be fun, right? No, it was boring. It was a commuter car.
Oh, yeah.
I know I figured that, but I thought maybe it would be a little bit sporty because it's a Honda, and Hondas, they're the enthusiasts. They're one of the big enthusiast brands of Japanese world.
To tweak.
Yeah. And the car was actually almost the exact opposite of an enthusiast car.
Right.
The car had this little ring around the speedometer, and if you were going efficient, it would turn green. But if you Florida, I'm like, I want to have some fun. You turn white. It's like, how dare you go have some fun in this? I thought that was hilarious of the car. So that was kind of just disappointing. I still recommended it because there are people who don't want to drive super fast and have fun in the car. They just want a car point A to B. Yeah. And that's a good car, point A to B.
That's right. Well, so here's a question. How did you get started in reviewing cars, or what led you to decide that was the thing to do?
Long story, but I'll try my best to paraphrase it. So I originally started doing car reviews back when I went to this Hayes dealership with my friend. Hayes is a big big dealership, and I want to say Gwinnett area. They have 2 dealerships that make lots of money, yada, yada. And that they had the new 2019 Ram 1500. Now, back then, my dad hated cars, hated all Dodge and Rams and Mopar or anything like that, because he worked on them when he was, you know, when he was younger. It's like, these are crap cars. Don't get them. They fail and much as that. So I'm like, so I had the impression, okay, this is going to be a crap car. It's going to break in like 20,000 miles, something like that. So I'm like, I'm looking around this, the 2019 Ram, I'm like, oh, it looks nice. I'm like, but I'm just thinking in my head, this ain't going to be fun. This ain't going to be any good. So I'm like, hey, want to test drive it? I'm like, okay. I test drove it and absolutely loved the truck. I'm like, this is actually nice. This is luxurious. This has leather. This is actually a nice truck to drive. And so I'm like, you know what? I bet people are actually not thinking about buying this because people might think of that impression that I have that Dodge isn't that good brand. So I started doing car reviews. I wrote a little article on my website, districtreviews.com. I think it's there. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote a little article explaining all the features of what I liked about the car. And then I go in detail of explaining how reliable it is, how Chrysler has put technology to make it reliable, to make it efficient, to do their best to overcompensate of what they used to be known for. And then from then on, I just started doing car reviews. I really enjoyed it, and here I am today.
Cool.
Very good.
Becca, you had to ask a question.
Sorry, that was my brain sticking in neutral for a moment because I was in between 2 different but similar trains of thought. Jake, what do you think about LS-based cars? Have you ever had the chance to test one of those out?
I think I've driven some of them. LS, if people don't know LS, that's a V8 engine. And I haven't driven a Corvette specifically, but I have driven I think it's count. I think it counts. I drove in a 2013 Camaro Z01, which had an LSA engine. It is it is not an actual Corvette engine. It's a variant of it, but it is an LS mode. It's confusing.
Well, the Corvette is not the only LS engine. There is a whole platform that's LS based.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of people don't think that. And so, yeah, the LS8 was such an amazing car. The one thing I really was surprised, not just about the engine, is how much fun the supercharger was. Slamming that thing and just hearing that whine was just made me feel like a little kid inside.
So the car worked for you the entire time you test drove it.
Yeah. Sorry, it was fun. It was. I had my fun.
I have a history with LS engines, and it's kind of an inside joke. That's why everybody's kind of laughing at that. One of my cars has an LS, and it's just sitting in the garage. It's dead.
Yeah, Becca has not historically been a fan of LS engines. That's the truth.
The other thing that I was obviously considering in the back of my head, and I was thinking, no, that's too obvious for me to ask, but I'll go ahead and throw it out. Have you ever driven a Mustang, Jake?
Yes, I have.
And what did you think about that?
I drove a four-cylinder. I did not like it.
Would you drive a Fox chassis? They haven't had a four-cylinder. Oh, one of the new ones. There are new ones out there.
I drove a new one, a new four-cylinder turbo. I'm sorry, that's not a Mustang.
Thank you.
Not a Mustang.
I just totally yelled that into the microphone. Thank you, Jake. I love you, Jake. Come back on more often. Four cylinders. It's not a Mustang.
And it even had a 10-speed.
No, I don't care.
Nah. Four 10-speed. That's get crazy. That thing out of here. That's the worst engine transmission ever made, besides the dual clutch transmission that they tried to put in.
Besides, a 10-speed is a Schwinn, isn't it?
Isn't that a two-wheeler?
To take the opposing viewpoint here, I've driven a bunch of the four-cylinder turbo ones, and I had no real issues with them, and I think they're probably a lot closer to what they originally had in mind back in the 60s was just something to cruise around in, put the top down, and go to the beach with your friends rather than a ripping, snorting muscle machine.
I think that's
a 65 maybe, not all the 60s.
But you're also saying it's turbo. It's not a regular four-cylinder.
Yeah, it's a 300-horsepower four-cylinder.
Right.
I mean, it's fun. It's just when I get into a sport car, and especially a Mustang, I want to hear a V8 noise. I'm sorry. I'm driving many muscle cars, and to me, unless you absolutely just want a Mustang just to have a Mustang, one of those people are like, I must have a Mustang because I'm Mustang girl 2229. And then fine, get a four-cylinder. But if you really want to have some fun, get that muscle car experience like you did, like you're an old, you remember the old back in the 60s, get a V8. It's the reason why it's called the GT.
Or like the old commercial said, I could have had a V8.
Now, my brother had one of the four-cylinder Fox-era Mustangs, and, he got smoked by Chevettes all the time.
Well, not if it was an SVO four-cylinder.
No, this was a 19... It was a baby blue 79 with a plain old four-cylinder and an automatic.
The first year... Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I actually have a little joke about the four-cylinder. My friend, his first car was a, I want to say 93? Yeah, 93, the Mustang, and it was a four-cylinder transmission. I had a 98 Corolla at the time. My little 98 Corolla, not a sport car, not meant to have fun, just a commuter car, could beat his little, beat his Mustang. I'm just trying to say, I'm like, Ford, you messed up bad when Toyota can beat you with a commuter.
Ford has that tendency, though. I think they have the capacity and of course, a nice track record of doing something spectacularly well. And every once in a while, they just fart.
Well, a lot of what they've got, especially with the Mustang, though, is doing the bare minimum, but having a good platform for us to take it and build the heck out of it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the appeals of it is there is so much room for us to do.
And also.
But the only platform for a four-cylinder, by the way, is to remove the engine.
I was going to say, too, though, as newer things come out, the performance envelope has just shifted so far. For instance, And of course, you know, this is where my bias comes in. I am our resident Lotus nut. And
I love Lotus.
Yeah, I used to have a 1986 Turbo Esprit, which it was a car I dreamed about since they came out in the early 80s. When I was 13, I saw one, and then finally by the time I was 40, I got one. And you know, it's a four-cylinder turbo, 200 some horsepower. Sounds tame by today's standards, but it was, you know, in the 5 second range, 0 to 60, and it was competitive in its day with a 944 turbo or a Ferrari 328 GTS. But then you take a 2000-something V6 Camry, and it will smoke the Esprit off the line.
Yeah.
You know, everything is so much quicker now.
Yeah, that is true.
But it's not always what it's about. Not always.
No, the Esprit will still outhandle everything else.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, which one would you – well, that would be obviously based on people's opinions of things. But,
yeah,
you know, some are just – I don't know.
All right.
No, I don't know the word I'm going for. You know what I mean, though.
Speaking of Lotuses, I've driven a Lotus Elise.
And
I want to say 2007, 2006. I forget what year it was. It was the U.S. model. I want to say a little bit before they completely botched the car. It has a Corolla engine.
Yeah.
I mean, the exact same engine my current car has.
It's okay. It's the same block, but it has a different head on it. Just to be, you know, pedantic about it. But yeah, it's a pretty powerful engine in a very lightweight package with some really excellent handling. So yeah, it's about as much fun as you can have.
Yeah.
It's like Jake, a go-kart.
One more question for you, Jake, before we answer our trivia question and wrap the episode here. My last question for you is, What about car modifications? Do you modify any cars? Have you seen any mods that have really turned you on, or do you just like to stick to stock appreciation?
It actually depends. I specifically have a playlist of reviews called Honest Modify Reviews, where specifically if the car has been heavily modified to the point to where it doesn't really drive like the right what it was stock, I make it a modifier review, and I go on to let the owner talk about what they've done to the car. Because I can't list an entire paragraph of mods they've done. So I let them, like, what have you done, and why did you change it, kind of give an insight. And one of my favorites was this lovely lady. Her name is, I think, Lauren? No, her name's Nicole. She owns a 2012 GTR. Beautiful car, bright red, beautiful car. And she has modified it to the brim, as you usually do with a GTR. 700 horsepower, lots of cool stuff, lots of mods. But one thing I liked about was her story behind the car. She went through a bad marriage a long time ago, and you're really getting out of it. And the GTR was the car that she saw, that's why I want to redeem myself. And so she worked and worked and finally got a good job, got money, and finally bought the car that she got. And that story just made the car more special. It's no longer than just a GTR I'm doing. It's her special car, her tribute, her, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're saying she traded in her husband for a GTR.
Exactly. Her own.
Which is almost a good trade.
Sorry.
She's a wonderful lady. And experiencing that car and all the love she's put into it, you can tell this ain't a GTR. This is her GTR, and that's why I love doing different cars. I don't mind people slightly modified because it's fun doing that, but I really like doing car reviews where I specifically put them as modified reviews if they completely made their own. It's not like a stock car. It's just special. I remember it more. I drive like over 40 cars a year. A car that really stands out is something that you made it your own.
That's what I do to every car, even if it's something silly or something big, moving switches around or what have you. Everything that I get into is I make it different for me. I make it my own. Exactly. I know what you mean.
I do like driving stock cars, but I don't really care. To me, I review the car. If it's modified, I review the modified, and then I talk about what I like about the car itself. Like the GTR, I explain like the CEO modified model of the car after an anime. If you never heard of the anime, I think it's called Vanguard, something like that. He really liked that show, and he wanted the GTR to represent Japanese culture, not European culture like all the other cars were. So he had, or he designed it after an anime, and I really liked that, so I talked about that.
See, all now right. I wish I could remember the name of that anime where he drives the Mustang around. I always forget the name of it.
I think I know what you're talking about, and I can't think of the name of it either.
I always forget.
So if our listeners can think of the anime where the main character is driving around a Mustang, please.
It's a blue Mustang.
Please clue us in. We need that info.
67, I want to say. Yeah. Anyway.
Jake, is there anything else you wanted to say? How do folks find you? How do folks find your reviews?
My YouTube channel, Just Jake Reviews.
All right, cool. Jake's Just Jake's Reviews is the name of the channel, right?
We look it out. You'll find a weird Viner, and then you find me.
Okay.
Obviously, don't click the Viner. You can. I have a big wheel. I make it obvious that I'm the car review guy.
Right.
Well, one thing I did discover that you can't stop typing at Just Jake, or you get the Viner up. You have to type in the word reviews, and then you're right there. Right.
Yeah.
All right, so our grand trivia auto question, let's wrap with that. Our trivia question for the day is, what is the only car to appear simultaneously on the covers of Time Magazine and Newsweek? Would that be the Pontiac GTO, the Hyundai Excel, the Chevy Corvette, or the Chrysler K car? Or the Ford Mustang. I was about to say,
there's one missing. That was four.
Missing. Yeah, and I made a mistake earlier. I was saying Hyundai GLS. I meant to say Hyundai Excel.
I think it's kind of like a trick question. You have to really think about it. The obvious question you can think is either the Corvette or the Mustang. Big cars, big name, they appear everywhere. When a new one comes out, they're on every single magazine on demand. But my answer is the GTO, and here's why. The car is not made currently. And to me, that car is a history car. That car really shows what were people thinking about at the time, and really in my opinion, it changed a lot of the industry. I mean, it was an amazing car.
That's right.
That kind of car would be on every magazine, not just because, oh, look, it's a GTO. It's a special car. And a lot of journalists, even today, remember, you remember that amazing 79? I forget the year. GTO, oh, yeah. The new car is not the same as the old. And then they talk about, I need the new Ferrari. Oh, I prefer the GTO because blah, blah, blah. To me, right. That's what the GTO is. Whereas the Mustang, it's a name.
Right. Becca, what do you think the answer is?
Strangely enough, I'm going with the K car.
The K car?
Mm-hmm.
Any reason why?
I knew you were going to ask me that. Yeah. You always ask me what my reason is. Mm-hmm. I'm just, something's ringing a bell.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure, but I'm going with K car.
Don, what do you think?
I'm going with K-Car because I think it saved Chrysler. And I think it was a business. When you think about Time and Newsweek, it was about really bringing Chrysler back from the brink. So an economic, not a car reason, but a business reason.
Right.
And Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking the K-Car for similar reasons. It was basically Lee Iacocca's big gamble to keep a major American company in business.
Right. Well, the answer to the Grand Trivia Auto question is, it's the Mustang.
Oh, the one time.
Right.
No. Okay, that's it. I'm done. Bye.
And I don't have any information as to why it happened simultaneously. I searched around and I haven't yet been able to find the actual reason why. I think it was just press coverage. You know, they must have unveiled something new.
Because it's an awesome car. What year? What year? Does it say what year?
Yeah, what this year? Occurred?
Let's see here.
Because obviously that changes everything, but what year?
Oh, man.
Well, I know it made a hell of a splash when it was introduced.
It was the 1964 Mustang, or the 65, as it were.
Well, that changes it.
That does.
Yeah.
Creation of the Mustang.
So that was it. That's our moment of Grand Trivia Auto. Thank you, Jake, for being our guest this time. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll join us again in a future episode sometime, maybe.
It's been a pleasure.
And
thank you very much.
And to the rest of our listeners, thank you for joining us. We value your feedback on The Thing About Cars. As always, please be in contact with us via our website. That's thethingaboutcars.com. Or you can find us on Facebook with just searching The Thing About Cars there. In the meantime, we hope you and yours are all staying safe. We'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take care.
Bye.
See you. Everyone.
Thank you for listening. listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.